Our universe is incredible, surrounded by mystery and beauty, and many of us have questions about our past, present, and future. October Hallam is an intuitive medium with over 20 years of experience. She has assisted people with discovering their path by understanding their past and connected the living to their loved ones who have made the transition. She is currently offering readings through Skype, Zoom, FaceTime, phone, and in person. You can reach her at theancientgift222@gmail.com. Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Neil Gore. Before I bring him on, a couple of announcements. Coming March 11th, 12th, and 13th, we got Forbidden Knowledge News Con. We're going to feature 8 presenters. It's going to be online with a Rockfin Premium membership. You get the entire conference for only $10. Just sign up through the link in the description. You're going to get the entire conference. You get all our premium content, all the content from every creator on Rockfin, including premium content. You get all our previous conferences and all new episodes there first. New free episodes always available free on Rockfin, as well as Odyssey and all podcast platforms. Our website, ForbiddenKnowledge.news, is also the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network. This is where we feature all the podcasts from our wonderful community. Be sure and follow us on Facebook, both pages, Instagram, and Twitter. All those links are in the description. Unfortunately, there are still some of us out there that have to deal with mask mandates at work, for work, or even to get on a plane. Check out Fake Mask. Fake Mask has the most breathable and authentic-looking masks on the market. They're sure to get you into stores, on airplanes, and into work. Click the link in the description. You're going to get 10% off your order. Today, I want to welcome Neil Gore. He is the founder of Portal to Ascension. He travels the world facilitating gatherings and filming documentaries that are intended to empower the individual to reclaim their sovereignty and awaken to their full potential. He also operates an online platform that creates and facilitates about 110 conferences and workshops a year. He presents his research on the ancient wisdom and future science of sound, vibration, and frequency, as well as in-depth explorations into ancient civilizations, archaeological discoveries, space anomalies, shedding light on the hidden esoteric wisdom, and exploring ways in which we can create unity and peace on Earth. Neil, welcome. How you doing?
Doing good, man. Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here and to meet you.
Yes, man. Thank you so much for coming on. Your research and the work you've been doing, it presents wonderful information, and I really enjoy what you're doing. I believe that we are living in a very critical time as well for humanity, and this what we're doing as a collective and what you're doing, presenting this information is extremely important. I think that we're at a point where we'll either be forced to evolve as humans or possibly face a fate that our previous ancient ancestors possibly did with multiple previous resets and falling of empires. But maybe if we do put on our big boy or girl pants, we can finally learn about our extended galactic families. Now, this is your first time on. I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit more about your background and what got you started on your path.
Yeah, sure. So I was actually born in England. So I was born and raised there. Well, for part of my life. And I moved to California when I was 12 years old. I was raised in the Hindu family, right? So Hindu from India. And I pretty much just followed the rites and rituals. Like I remember as a kid, I would be singing bhajans, which are like Hindu hymns in temple. And looking back at it in retrospect, I never really firmly believed anything. Like I was just doing what I was told, following the rituals. Moved here to California, continued the same way, even went to Sunday school for Hinduism, in which I was learning the Bhagavad Gita and the Mahabharata, but it was really just community oriented. So I graduated when I was 18 in 2000. And at that point, I'd already been writing poetry for a couple of years, like abstract kind of poetry about life, anxiety, depression. And then I started going even more into my poetry and started creating spoken word and freestyle rapping. And when I was doing that, I was having all types of concepts being introduced into my writing on like ancient, well, more than ancient history. It was more like black holes, sci-fi info, you know, things you'd see on like sci-fi shows, planets, ETs, things like that. I started doing research 2001, 19 years old, online. And I was also kind of reflecting on like the history and religion in general, and just reflecting on my religion, because even though I did all this stuff, I never really thought about the end result, which is, why am I doing all this? Who is God? So I had a couple of thoughts. Like, I was researching more jargon, if you will, in order to put into my poetry. And then I was also curious about what is the root of all religion. And the root of all religion was what sparked my first entrance into this, really, where I stumbled on a few individuals in 2001. William Henry, Nassim Haramein, Jordan Maxwell, and Jim Self, right? And if anybody knows about them, it's a really full spectrum awareness, just all of them combined. And I immediately found about the Sumerian Tablets of Creation and started reading about the Sumerian tablets, drawing parallels to different religions. And then all of a sudden, I started finding source information, ancient information that all these other religions that we currently have as the predominant religions on the planet had pulled from. But then my question was, why are all these religions saying that my way is the only way? Through Jesus, you can only be saved. Through becoming Muslim, you can only be saved, and so on and so forth, with many religions in the world, when we can form a little bit of research, track back that there are actually original stories that they borrowed from. So how can it be the only way when we can show that it came from something earlier? And then the question is, well, did it happen again, the same exact scenario in a future version, or was it just this original story and they're all just putting it in their own image, in their own way to their own community? That started my journey down the rabbit hole, 2001, 2002, also writing a lot of spoken word poetry at that time on ancient history and consciousness, quantum physics. I went deep down the rabbit hole. So from 2001 to 2008, I was like, definitely a lot of extraterrestrial awareness, like fully immersed in it, from channeling to researchers to whistleblowers to disclosure, but also tracking the bloodlines out of Sumeria, right? Sumer. And tracking the bloodlines to modern times, secret societies, and getting to a point of hardcore conspiracy theories where I was pretty much like, we're screwed. They freaking control us. They've taken over. What are we going to do? We can't get out of this matrix. And then I'll just stop there and we can go back and forth a bit. But then 2008 was when I had that shift. So from like 2001 to 2008, I was just like collecting information. A lot of it was conscious spiritual stuff. But at the end of like the beginning of 2008, I was pretty much really an angry person because of what they did to us.
Yes, and I can relate to that totally. And I was the same way. And I just wanted to go around shouting to everybody, you know, about the corruption and everything going on. And people, I found out, didn't want to hear it. You know, they have to be ready to hear this stuff. So I had to quickly reel it back and kind of do some introspection on what was going on. And eventually, you know, I'm at a great place now to where I don't worry about any of this shit. But, you know, right. I had to go through have a lot of experiences, including spiritual contact experiences, to where I could get to this place. But I think that spirituality is a huge part of this. There's a lot of angry people right now that are waking up to this, that, you know, they're not in that spiritual place and they just have a lot of anger towards it. But I found that that doesn't help the situation. That's not going to help us move forward with any of this. And it wasn't until I, you know, I can only speak for myself, it wasn't until I found more spiritual place in this whole situation that things started to get a little better in my life.
Exactly. Yeah, same here with me. So I started the group, the online group, 2012 Consciousness, Mind Evolution, and Presence in 2006, right? And then for a couple of years, the group name kept morphing, but I was still pretty much into the bloodlines, conspiracies, following the secret societies and all that. And then in 2008, I had a moment where I was kind of just reflecting on everything. And I was like, you know, like first, when I first got into the Sumerian scriptures, the reason why I went back to all religions and back to Hinduism is because I immediately found out that they had some sort of advanced awareness of the universe and quantum physics, vibration and frequency, and that spirituality, dimensions, consciousness is a vibratory state and everything is frequency. So I started accepting the religion I was raised in and pulling from it, not like becoming religious about it, but pulling from it, realizing that yoga, meditation, chanting are all vibratory tools that were given thousands of years ago in order for us to get to a specific level of consciousness or to maintain a level of empowerment. But even though I knew all this stuff, I was still in fear. So I reflected on myself and I was like, well, I know all this stuff is spiritual, but why am I so like upset and angry? And the few things happened that year. I met my soul family. I started performing spoken word like every single week at different events. And I got fired as a financial analyst and had to go full-time Portals to Ascension. A lot of stuff happened. So when my realization was the bigger picture of everything happening for a reason, realizing the cycles of time that basically we go through evolutions of consciousness and devolution of consciousness, and that the darkness, like the individuals that I think are controlling us, are actually working for the light. They're giving us the experiences that we signed up for, which is get this contrast of darkness in order for us to basically transcend and really know what it is to be light beings on this earth. So when I realized that everything was happening the way it was supposed to happen, I stopped being angry towards these individuals or groups or beings and started having compassion for them and even gratitude for giving me the experience that I chose to have. But even though that occurred, I didn't go on a level where I was ignorant to what was happening. You know, I still take informed action to right the what I perceive as the wrongs in the world, even though I understand that this is all happening the way it should. And that was kind of the beginning of Portal to Ascension.
Yes, and you cover and you explore a lot of consciousness categories, a lot of things about our existence, and like you said earlier, extraterrestrials and the nature of reality in general. And from the time you started looking into this stuff until now, what would you say are some of the most profound things you've learned about what we are in this existence as far as our purpose here and the nature of our own reality?
Oh man, that's like so much right there. Honestly, like I've been honest, I am just inspired and curious about mind-blowing information all the time. My mind is blown every single day and it keeps going on more and more and more. So to come up with a few, I can't do that. But I would say like, let's just say this, that I feel from research, from experience, from meditation, from plant medicines, many different things have all led me to understanding that the source, whatever source is, just wanted to experience itself infinitely. The infinite singularity wanted to experience itself infinitely. And part of that infinite experience is every form of experience you can have, from light, love, higher dimensions, no free will, darkness, forgetfulness, amnesia of our experiences on this planet. So having that understanding that source basically fractalized to experience itself infinitely makes me realize that the real meaning to life, I guess the biggest profound thing is what is the meaning to life? You know, for years I would say, I don't know. But at this point, I would say the meaning to life or existence is to experience, just to have these experiences, right? So that is the premise and the foundation of I guess my belief system. But I jokingly say sometimes my belief is that I have no beliefs because like, so everything is so malleable, things are shifting all the time and you got to be open to it. And then I would say another one is understanding the cycles of time, the evolutions and then devolutions. You know, we have this arrogance of, oh, we're the most advanced we've ever been on this planet. Well, from not only archaeological evidence that has been coming out on an exponential level in the last few years, and from ancient scriptures, and even looking at the position of our solar system in our galaxy and how it rotates around our galaxy. And I'm doing an actual 3-hour presentation on specifically our galaxy dynamics this weekend. And just when you look at all this stuff, you realize that the chances were that there were advanced civilizations in the past, and now we're uncovering this awareness. And what does that mean? Why did they devolve? Why did they collapse? What happened to them? There's a lot of truths that we can extract from all this information that can assist us in today. And not only has a lot of it been lost to time, but then also a lot of it has been hidden, whether it's underneath the Vatican, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's in the Library of Congress. In Congress, like I saw a documentary where they went in and showed the books. They have all these crazy metaphysical books there and historical books, just like in plain sight for people that are politicians specifically allowed to go in there, right? So just understanding our ancient history and the true timeline of history is one of the most profound things.
Definitely, man. I have to agree with that. You mentioned plant medicines, and I am a huge fan of plant medicines myself. Mm-hmm. I've used different types of plant medicines, mainly psychedelics, in my journey to kind of help me figure out my own stuff, get past traumas, traumas that happened in the past, and mm-hmm. explore the other reality that exists. And I was able to, you know, my first contact experience was through meditation without any type of psychedelics or other substances. And yeah. I was actually told by these entities that I contacted through these meditation sessions that it would be okay to use psychedelics to not only contact them, but help me get through a lot of the things that I needed to. And, you know, once I started doing that, it was like, you know, it was like having a personal therapist in my head every time I would experiment with these plant medicines. And it was extraordinary, the experiences I had. I was wondering if maybe you could tell us about some of the plant medicines that helped you along the way.
Yeah. And a lot of people that have done plant medicine and even facilitators all seem to say it's like 3 years of therapy in one session,
yeah.
You know? So, and it's funny because I was saying it's like 3 years of therapy in one session. And then I met like 6 or 7 people that all said the same thing with the same amount of years. Yeah. So I was like, there's gotta be something similar here. Right. So I've done a few different things. Like when I was waking up in 2001, one thing I didn't add to the story that I normally don't add is that mushrooms was actually really a beneficial thing in the beginning stages, right?
Right on.
So I was doing it recreationally in college. I was like putting it in a burrito and then driving to Vegas. You know what I'm saying? That's what we were doing. And we were just like having the time of my life, seeing like Smurfs form from Studio 54 lights, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't realize I was having a spiritual experience.
Yep.
I was still having a spiritual experience, even though I was doing it recreationally.
Yes.
Then I woke up even more. I realized later that all the music I was listening to was conscious stuff. Like I was listening to Tool. Tool is my favorite band, right? And they're like all about that. So then I started waking up and started doing it more intentionally. But mushrooms really, I feel, unlocked a part of my consciousness that allowed for the poetry to flow from me. I've written thousands of spoken word pieces now that are all in alignment with my own spiritual journey, ancient history, a lot of ancient history stuff, quantum physics, many, many things on extraterrestrials. I even have like albums that I'm creating now, one on intergalactic spoken word pieces, one on astral traveling, that kind of stuff. So mushrooms really assisted me with unlocking that, I feel. Then as I progressed in life and got older, then I got introduced to ayahuasca. And I've done ayahuasca probably around 11 times now. The first few times I did ayahuasca, the first four times, I didn't have any visuals. It was all body convulsions, right? I was like releasing trauma through my body into the earth. It was intense. But I couldn't control it until I went to Peru for my 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th time in the Amazon jungle. And then on the 6th time, I started seeing visuals. I saw like butterflies, snakes, spiders. I would go in the mouth. And at the end of the 6th time, I heard a voice speak to me, and it was my own voice. So that was the beginning of me actually having more of that kind of, you know, connection. Then I did a few other times, went to Costa Rica as well. But just to get to what kind of experiences that what happened after my experiences is my ability to interact and communicate with myself shifted, interacting with the world. My traumas of what happened to me as a child started dissipating, and I started to come to terms with it. A sense of self-love cultivated, because when I was raised, My parents loved me, but they're also conservative Indians, and they didn't know how to show love in the way that I felt I might have needed it. So I really didn't have that nourishing. So ayahuasca taught me how to be my own father and mother, how to teach, how to nourish and love myself rather than like expect it from something externally. And because I was considered like a screw up from my dad for so many years, even though he's a great guy, I just wasn't doing well in school, and I'm Indian and you got to be doing well in school, right? And everybody else is doing great. So I was just reinforced how I was not worth anything. I was never going to amount to anything. I was going to keep being like, because I kept doing things that they didn't like. So as I grew up and I became an adult, I just thought I was worthless and that I had nothing to contribute and that nobody would want me. Nobody would want to be with me. So plant medicine helped me come to peace with that. And I would say ayahuasca was the number one thing for that. Besides that, I've done combo, which is a plant medicine, it's a frog medicine, really. And that's not psychedelic. I'll just add one more thing. But the most profound thing I've ever had was 10-day silent meditation retreats without any plant medicine that was even more powerful than my ayahuasca experiences. Those are the ones that really changed my life.
Yeah, man, that's super interesting. And you mentioned how you were kind of listening to conscious music before you even woke up. It's funny how I did the same thing. I was listening to, it was more along the lines of rebellious punk rock, but it was very political. It was very anti-government, anti-establishment, things like, you know, Bad Religion and Propaganda and all these, early 90s punk rock bands that had, they knew what was going on. And I was listening to this stuff as well as a lot of independent conscious music that would get into deeper type of metaphysical and occult topics. So I was always into that stuff, like Tool and other bands. It's pretty interesting how it all came full circle, after I woke and just realized, why I was kind of drawn to this type of music and the messages that were coming across, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very, very, very interesting. Now, I want to talk a little bit about, you mentioned ancient history and how we were probably extremely advanced and we had a much different, probably culture and different global outlook on religions and mysticism and the occult in general. And we probably had a better understanding of the nature of reality and how to interact with it and magic and all these things that we're looking at, as well as possibly other maybe species, other type of humans off planet, because the evidence that keeps pointing to there were many different types of beings on this earth in ancient times. So I would like to get your thoughts on our origins, if you think that it could be possibly close to what we hear in the Sumerian mythos, that we are maybe some kind of experiment for these off-planet beings.
Yeah, so from what I've pieced together, that there is either, we're definitely seeded from another planet. I feel that something happened, but it could have been that there was a native population on Earth, right? And if we look at the Sumerian text, it's the Homo erectus. And then there was some sort of hybridization that created Homo sapien. And if you look at conventional evolution, you can see that Homo erectus became Homo sapien in a very short period of time, when normally it takes a little longer for that. So either it happened one time or it happened many different times, and the seeding has happened, occurred over and over again. It's been many experiments, because from the people I work with and stuff that I've come across, there was definitely a Lyran, Pleiadian, Syrian connection to Earth, in which the Lyrans and the Syrians had come down to do some genetic hybridization here. So either this story is the same story as the Anunnaki, or this happened at a different time and the Anunnaki story occurred separately because it was another seeding. But when you look at the Lyran and the Syrian story, you have their origins coming from different planetary systems than you have for the Anunnaki. So for me, the jury's still out in regards to whether this happened multiple times or one time, but I am leaning towards that it happened multiple times. And some of the times that it occurred, the hybridization probably wasn't Homo sapien, but was another hominoid, another human species. And the thing is that some people maybe don't realize is that humanoid species can actually interbreed with each other, right? So if we had Homo erectus on the planet right now and Homo sapien, we could mate and have children with each other. It's able to happen. Hominoids are able to do that, right? So now we get to the story of the Sumerian text that went into the Old Testament of the sons of God having mating with the daughters of men, right? So the sons of gods are the fallen angels, the advanced humanoid species that come from Nibiru, right? If we look at the Sumerian scriptures, and they were basically the second tier of gods on Nibiru. There was two tiers of gods. It was the Anunnaki and the Ajiji. The Ajiji were the sons of God. This is the original text of where all the sons of God stuff come from. And then the sons of gods, also known as the fallen angels because they came from the heavens, ended up mating with the daughters of men, which could be some hybridization or could actually be physical. And then they created the Nephilim, right? And then the giants came from that. And now we have the Greek connection. And now we have giants spread out in every single ancient scripture that's pre-flood information talks about giants. So something definitely probably happened in regards to maybe an advanced species either hybridizing with us or actually like having actual intercourse and creating an offspring with us. And we already know that in the last 200,000 years that humans have been on the planet, Homo sapiens, that we've lived with seven different hominoid species. This is conventionally accepted, right? Denisovans are one, Neanderthals, which some of us have some Neanderthal DNA at certain levels, right? Some more than others because we interbred, right? And so we've already conventionally accepted that there were seven. But the theory is, also what's conventionally accepted is they were all, the reason why they all, you know, went away and died off is because we were intellectually superior than them. That even though we have no idea what their culture was, we have no idea what they thought, how their brains worked, that the belief is that all these seven different hominoid species actually weren't smart enough to interact and become sentient and do what we did on the planet. So maybe that's the case for some of these, like Neanderthal, blah, 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 whatever. But we've also come across other species that we know were different hominoid species that existed on the planet that aren't accepted as one of those seven conventional species. For example, the Paracas people in Peru, the elongated skull people. Okay. Are you familiar with that information at all? The elongated skulls?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've worked extensively with Brian Forrest in the past. And a few years ago, we even did an event on the DNA results of the Paracas skulls. So it's really hard to get, you get your hand on a Paracas skull, but to get a fragment of it and then send it off to get DNA testing was very difficult until it wasn't. And then it happened. And then a few years ago, they went ahead and did that. And they wanted to find out, are these beings Homo sapien? Because a lot of people think that they're naturally deformed skulls, but they aren't naturally deformed skulls because it's two different types of skulls. You can put them next to each other and you can see they're completely different. Then the artificially formed skulls, literally like from the baby, they're put two plants on the head. It's just sequentially, or it's just progressively tightened as they get older to flatten the skull. Sometimes they chipped a little skull right here to make more space, and they look deformed. The natural ones don't look like that at all. Our skulls only have one suture line, Homo sapien, down the center. The Paracas skulls have two suture lines, a genetic anomaly. Our skulls do not have two holes at the back of their skulls. Why do the Paracas skulls have two little holes at the back of the skulls? Well, the heads were so big, they had veins coming from the front to the back to provide blood supply to the back of the brain, right? Not just a genetic anomaly, a completely different type of being. And then the studies came out of the DNA results. Lo and behold, they're not Homo sapien. And then secondly, a lot of the skulls have red hair. Well, that doesn't make sense, because if we look at the Alaskan land bridge and the indigenous people that came over the Alaskan land bridge, there is no red hair genetics in them. So they did some research of where they came from, Mesopotamia. So their lineage comes from Mesopotamia. We got Sumerian, sons of God, Nephilim connection there. You know, these are all information that's coming out. I think you can connect the dots by just what I'm saying here, maybe make up your own ideas on it. So what might have happened is there was these beings that lived in Mesopotamia, the elongated skull beings, or their ancestors, maybe they morphed into something else over hundreds of years. They took some sort of craft or boat, and then they made their way to the shoreline of Peru to Paracas, which is probably the biggest archaeological site in the entire world. The whole of Peru is like an archaeological site. You can even go to somebody's backyard sometimes and dig and find something. Like, it's just like so much happened there. And then they started a civilization there. And as they were starting the civilization there, the people that were worshiping them and following them as gods became their followers. Who were the followers? The Inca. The Inca didn't have a royal class. The Inca were the commoners. The Paracas were the royal class. If you go to a Paracas skull cemetery, it's on a higher ground. The Inca are on a lower ground, symbolizing the royalty over that. So what the Inca and other civilizations were doing was, when the Paracas vanished, they were attempting to deform the skulls to look like their gods or their royal class that were there before them. So just that's just one that is a smoking gun, because there's a lot of evidence out there for it. You can go to a Longitas skull museum, you know. So that goes to show that there's definitely been some sort of thing going on the planet, whether it's hybridization. But the fact is, we've probably lived with other hominoid species that were more advanced or as advanced as us.
That's what I was going to say. You know, is it necessarily off planet, or could we have just been a vastly different type of humanoids living, you know, amongst many different types, like giants, possibly little people, people with elongated skulls, probably individuals that looked a lot different than we do now. You know, I'm wondering if it's just a bunch of different types, you know, or it could be a combination of both. I go back and forth on this all the time, you know. I used to, you know, think, is it just strictly interdimensional, or are they visiting from other planets? Now I'm like, well, it could probably be both, as well as the fact that we could probably have had multiple species of humans and maybe intermixing of different types of off-planet species.
Yeah, so I'm thinking it's both. I mean, if you look at ancient scriptures, Hindu scriptures, Kabbalic texts, the Old Testament, Sumerian scriptures, indigenous tribes all over Americas, they all talk about star beings. And a lot of them talk about being created from an Egyptian text. In the cradle civilization, Mesopotamia, this time around, because maybe it happened multiple times in ancient cycles, they had all this information, mathematics, science, Pythagorean theorem came from there, everything. And when they, when it came time for them to tell who made this information, who was the genius that came up with it, they just said the star beings, you know, the Dogon. No one took credit. Everybody gave credit to these beings that came down sometime in our past and taught them this information. So I think that definitely there was a lot of things going on the planet, and some of them were probably native to the planet, and then some of them were seeded and different experiments had occurred. But this has probably been going on for hundreds of thousands of years, if not even longer. But when you look at all these ancient cultures and scriptures, they do talk about these star beings. And then all of our concepts of God, the single God, can all be traced back to an extraterrestrial. So either we get rid of God in general and just go with the extraterrestrial thing, right? This was my first thing in 2003, 2004, when I realized this stuff. I was like, well, either we just say God doesn't exist because they're just talking about some mythological ETs that probably never occurred, or we say that, well, that there probably was a huge extraterrestrial influence on the Earth at that time and something was occurring. Now, in regards to interdimensional, when I first got into all this stuff, I was like, Arcturian this, Sirian that, Pleiadian this, right? First of all, I don't really like those terms, because there's seven stars in the Pleiades. To say that there's only one group of being coming down here, we generalize things too much, you know? The Arcturus has got all these planets around it. Like, there's probably multiple different types of beings. So we just generalize it as this one thing, right? Yeah. So when I was into all this stuff, talking about Arcturus, immediately introduced to six-dimensional Arcturian beings, seventh-dimensional Pleiadian beings, 12th-dimensional Pleiadian beings from Bringers of the Dawn. So it was never not an interdimensional thing for me. The extraterrestrial question was always interdimensional, because in this third dimension, and then 10 to 20 years later, when I'm really like, well, how does life survive in the third dimension? Well, when you're in the third, fourth dimension, because we technically we live in the fourth, when we're in that dimension, you are a victim to your external environment, for lack of a better term. So your external environment can really affect your livelihood and your ability to exist, which is why we exist within the Goldilocks zone, which is why water needs to be a certain at a certain temperature, the climate and all that stuff for us to survive. as you go up in dimensions, you gain control of different elements. So in the fifth dimension, you gain control of the solar system. So any anomalies within the solar system that affects you, you can actually navigate and not actually be destroyed by. So in the fifth dimension, chances are a whole solar system could be inhabited because the beings could live everywhere and not have to, you know, be destroyed because they're living so far away from the sun. Then when we go to the sixth dimension, we start cultivating the power of the galactic center. And now galactic weather isn't able to affect us. And then we continue to go higher. Then we harness the void, right? So these are the different like type 0, 1, 2, 3 civilizations, basically, even accepted by science, right? Conventional science. So, so I think that many different civilizations that exist within our dimension probably don't have the technology, and they are limited by certain frequency ranges and limited by certain elements within the solar system to actually go and navigate and come and interact with us. So most of the beings that interact with us probably are phased out of different dimensions or exist in higher octaves of existence. They could be a civilization that exists in our dimension that ETs were visiting them. They took the technology, reverse engineered it, and were able to harness black holes or wormholes and go and visit other planets, just like I think we could do, because that's happening on our planet. You know what I mean? So these are just some of my thoughts about it.
Now, do you think that there are multiple races visiting us with multiple different types of interest? You know, many of my guests tend to believe that this planet has a lot of sought after resources from mm-hmm. around the galaxy, including us and some of the energy that we have. What do you think about that?
I feel, and I've been saying this for a while now, that I feel like there's like countless amounts of agendas going on this planet taking place here, from benevolent to maybe not. And a lot of, you were going to say something?
Oh, no.
Okay, no. Okay, cool. So yeah, I feel that there's a lot going on here, and a lot of beings have an invested interest in Earth for many reasons. But one of the main reasons is that it seems that many of these beings have donated DNA to this planet. Experience, not just humans, ant beings, cockroach beings, like all types, peacocks, that the whole entire planet is a test of speciesism or racism, galactic racism. We're trying to figure out how to basically live in harmony with each other, and all these civilizations from outer galaxy, maybe all of them, or maybe a few of them, have donated DNA to this Earth experience. So not only are they here trying to see if we can all live in peace together, but they also are observing their own creations manifest and flourish and blossom. So I do feel like Earth is the biggest light show in the universe. And that's because we're like the Library of Alexander for DNA. And many of them are also able to see how DNA evolves and then utilize that DNA by extracting it to create all types of experiments. And then we get into the hybridization program, you know, in which there's actually been government documents to talk about their hybridization with an ET being that has come out as well. And so yes, to answer your question, I feel there's a lot going on this planet, and even astrally, like I feel like right now around me, there's probably like 100 different things occurring, and like, maybe like an ET holding a petri dish to collect my skin, you know, like at this point, I feel all of it is possible, because ultimately all that exists is vibration and frequency. This isn't real. You know, this is as real as we make it. It's a paradox. It's real and it's not real. It's never not, it's not just one thing. But ultimately we have now broken through, since the 1900s, the veil of physicality and realize we are actually frequency vibrating. So within that right there in lies the illusion. That is such a profound awareness, right? Non-locality in quantum physics. One piece of information in any point in space and time, that same information can be extracted anywhere else in space and time instantaneously without distance. What's going on here, right? What are we in? A holographic projection of consciousness? So if that's the case, then ultimately I feel all of these other things are possible.
Yes, for sure. And it, just like everything seemingly in our reality, it's dualistic, and I'm sure it's the same with these entities. Some have our interest in mind, some may not, some may not even care. But with everything that has kind of led to our global situation that we're seeing now, it makes me wonder how much of this is human doing, how much of this is just evil humans, or is it under some kind of guidance from other beings? What do you think about that?
Well, I think basically we exist in a matrix, a construct, a cycle that has been created. And not only the solar system within a cycle, but then there's other bigger cycles, like the galactic system as well, that has its own construct and matrix. Now, so I feel that's been imposed and created for actually the reason of us having experience. But then there's these other theories that in that cycle, it was influenced by a negative force that actually impose themselves within our cycle. And now they're having more of an effect and they're trying to violate free will. But ultimately the law of the universe is free will and they're not able to do that. So on the higher scheme of it all, it's all happening the way it's meant to be. So I feel that there are definitely some nefarious agendas going on, whether this planet is under some sort of like reptilian matrix or something like that. You know, I've heard all the theories, but I don't really know. Ultimately, I feel that it's inevitable that we're going to be ascending in consciousness, that we go through these cycles. We just happen to be at a very low cycle right now, or have been. And we've been at such a low cycle of consciousness that we're all, the people that are awake are speculating, why are we here? Why are we here? Right? And it's because we're just at that frequency. And now we're shifting, you know, even the position of our galaxy, solar system, our galaxy is shifting, and we're going from the Kali Yuga, which we left around 200 years ago, and then we fully entered the Dwarpa Yuga in 1900, the age of energy and the age of individual sovereignty. And now we're at the beginning phase of that. By the end of this cycle, we master what it means to be individual and sovereign with also accepting the collective and assisting with the collective. And then we also master our energetic bodies and energy in general, frequency, vibration, quantum reality. So this is just all a part of it. Some people believe that we're breaking the cycle, though, and that we're going to transcend out of the cycle and just be at this vibration moving forward.
That would be wonderful. I definitely see the side of it. I see people waking up and kind of evolving in consciousness, but I also see a side where people are de-evolving and kind of being stuck or being forced to through fear, you know, paying attention to some of the agendas going on and kind of maybe fear is keeping them in this lower vibrational state to where they can't go into this new age like the rest of us are going. What do you think?
Yeah, and I'll give you the two different theories and then we have to make our own decision because I'm not tapped into the 12th dimension. I don't know everything, you know, I just know the theories and what are possible. Right. So like ultimately, like we're going through a collective dark night of the soul. The way I look at it is that say 1,000 years ago, here's a black hole and we're at the ends of the black hole. And it's taken us like 100, 200 years to go all the way around the black hole. As time progressed and time did not speed up, like some people say, what happened is our ability to process stimuli and our consciousness expanded. And as our ability to process stimuli and our consciousness expanded, the illusion is time speeding up. So as we started going closer to the singularity, we're at this point now that things that you couldn't even leave your village because it was too far away. You wouldn't even see more than a couple of people sometimes, right? Life was much simpler. Now you're being bombarded with stimuli all the time. So the same lessons that might have taken multiple lifetimes for you to even confront, you're literally being smacked in the face like three times a day with the same experience until you learn the lesson. So we were here and now we're right at the singularity, literally ready to drop into the singularity and then emerge into this new octave, this new game, this new virtual reality, if you will. So what's happening is that at the end of this, karma needs to be resolved, right? And some people don't believe in karma. I'm just saying your dark night of your soul, your traumas, your triggers, your past life traumas, all these things need to be resolved. So the reason why we're seeing chaos is a lot of people aren't ready to confront that. But they're having no choice to, right? Just to say what happened the last couple of years, for example, everybody was dropped down on the same peg. Attorneys were at food banks. You know what I'm saying? Like the hierarchical structure is collapsing. So what I feel that we're seeing is the system is literally collapsing. And through that, a lot of people are going to go out kicking and screaming. Okay. Some of them may choose to not want to go to this next reality because they are so stuck with what it is before. But when the system collapses and a new thing emerges, it might take 10, 20, it might take 100 years. We just started this new cycle.
Yeah,
we're going to have to eventually get used to a new reality in which it benefits the betterment of, it benefits all humanity. And to add to that, the Kali Yuga cycle was authority and hierarchy. Okay, we give up a power to authority, we give up a power to hierarchy. The individual is really a 1900s invention, right? The power of the individual. We've now got people are demanding the sovereignty at such a level that to have this overpowered completely take control of us like they want to is not going to happen. It's going to backfire. There's too many people. And the more and more they impose certain things, the more percentage of people wake up to that what's going on.
Yeah.
Until it gets to a point where they just can't deny that something's going on right now. You know, like a lot of things, as I said, a lot of people who are called conspiracy theorists, now all the stuff that they've been saying, people are starting to accept a lot of the stuff, not all of it, as a reality, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I could break down the last couple of years, but I don't want to because that's too divisive.
Well, I mean,
and censorship is involved in that too, so...
For sure. I think you're spot on. It's kind of like our collective consciousness wants to evolve, wants to get out of the shitty state that it's in, and it's kind of creating a little bit of conflict and a little bit of anxiety and things that'll get us as a collective to kind of spark and wake up and make that evolution happen, you know?
Yeah. And it might not happen like immediately right now. We have a lot of time to keep moving forward, you know, but ultimately there are communities that are creating now, are being created for this. So there will be a world where you can go and be in those type of worlds, right? Like, I know people that are going around, I'm literally traveling the world right now, looking for land to create a portal to Ascension Village. That's like literally what I'm up to right now.
Wow.
And, there's other people doing the same thing. There's intentional communities that are working because a lot of them failed. Right. And like, so I feel that that world that we want to create, people are going to have to create separate away from society, and society in itself and the system that we've created will start to crumble. And like, I'll give you an example. So democracy, right? Democracy, 700 BC, around about 300 BC, really started actually having these conversations about democracy. 700 BC was the beginning of the Kali Yuga, the next age, right? And then when we started shifting out of this, at the end of that age, democracy stops working. The reason why is people get split so ideologically within democracy that one side cancels the other side every time one side gets power, but technology continues to grow, but progression within society stops because of the ideological differences. So the next age becomes an age of like ideological communities that move together forward with a collective belief system. So we're in those phases right now. I mean, I think that the countries that we have are going to be restructured in the future, that, you know, that like some of the places that exist right now may not exist pretty soon, or may actually be in smaller communities. We need to reconnect to the earth and start cultivating and living sustainably. These are all different things that need to occur. But the unfortunate thing is that humans usually wait until the last minute of when they can't have no other choice before they make a change, right? Yeah. But we're at that point right now, especially when it comes to a health, heart disease and cancer being like the two biggest things in the US, the obesity problem, you know, all these things. Yeah. Like for example, I've been saying this for a while, like McDonald's and all these GMO foods in restaurants only really started, the artificial food thing started in the late 80s, early 90s, okay? We're only seeing the first group of people that are getting diseases from that now.
Yeah.
You know, like, and my sister went through all this stuff based on her food, and they don't know what these diseases are that people are getting because they have no history or any documentation of this. So people are getting sick from it, and what we might see is a huge awakening occur because people are going to basically hit rock bottom in many ways. And they're going to have no choice to maybe reflect on who they are and their purpose on this planet. and even cultivate things that really matter rather than being on the grind, the 9 to 5, focusing on our relationships with ourselves and others. So a lot of systems need to change. And this, the only way we can do it is by creating those systems ourselves. So I'm actively looking to make my own area where I can start implementing these kind of things, you know?
Man, that's great. And that's what we need more of. But with there's so many strange kind of competing agendas happening at the same time. For whatever reason it's happening, you know, it may be for a collective reason, but there's some weird stuff coming up right now, stuff that we may not understand right now. It probably will, you know, it'll come to fruition later. Everything will come together. But the whole, let's say, for example, the alien UFO disclosure thing from the mainstream and our own government. You know, nothing makes sense that's coming out of it. The players involved, I wouldn't trust, you know, with anything in my life. So it's very interesting to see them now, and especially at 2020 and beyond, try and come up with this alien narrative. And it still doesn't make sense what they're trying to do with it or where they're trying to go. And I don't trust any of it. I find it very interesting that now they're doing it. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, it's so interesting how they hijack the movement. Okay. So 7 years ago, you do a UFO disclosure search and a lot of the people I work with, including myself, would show up on the internet. Now it's CNN, MSNBC, Louis Elizondo, Hal Puthoff, all those people will show up, right? For the next 100 pages on Google. Okay. Like nothing else, just their stuff. So, and then all of a sudden they're the key players of it. Well, who made them the key players? The media and the government literally put them there. Why is it all of a sudden, for years we're talking about how the media and the government's lying, and then all of a sudden the media and the government put these things out for us to hate, right? Including politically. And then all of a sudden people that were anti the media are all of a sudden believing in it, okay? So that's just one thing. Now we have to think about why is it that all these individuals that are coming out are military officials? Okay. Well, one thing is weaponization of space. Another thing is, what do they talk about? They don't talk about the aliens. They talk about what they're driving, what technology they have. They want to know the technology. But the third reason is, and this is the biggest reason why the military and the Pentagon is behind all of this, is because where are they seeing the UFOs mostly? Nuclear bases. All right. Okay. So, and that's ever since 1945, the first test, the nuclear explosion. The San Antonio, New Mexico, the first UFO crash, Roswell, right after a nuclear test. And what seems to be happening is you go back to Dolores Cannon's information when she was regressing people to the ET lives and their life between lives, is that when we deal with nuclear energy, we're splitting the atom, and the atom affects other dimensions because it's quantum. And when we affect other dimensions, it could cause damage in other realities and frequencies that are beyond Earth, our earthly experience. So a lot of these ETs and UFOs are around these nuclear bases, just basically keeping us in check to make sure that, you know, we're not going to destroy ourselves and other beings. And you can even do a search on the internet of UFOs and nuclear bases, and you'll find multiple websites of just listings of all these sightings there. And even if you look at these individuals that have come out, you know, when, for example, when Tom DeLonge did his whole broadcast from his Twitter with the whole pantheon of ex-CIA, ex-NSA, ex-NASA officials behind him that all just happened to quit their job 2 days to 1 week ago, as if to think that we're stupid. We're like, oh, no, I'm only doing this because I quit my job and now I can do this. But why is it that you all quit within the last week? Like, this is just too obvious, you know, like. Whereas they were saying, they even gave testimonials that we were seeing them above Navy ships, we're seeing them at nuclear sites and all this. So that's all just the general information. Now, in regards to what's going on, is that it's inevitable this information was coming out. It really, in 2015, 2016, when Hillary Clinton went on Jimmy Kimmel and said, Jimmy, they're not called UFOs anymore. We call them UAPs, completely scripted, right? That was the movement from ridiculing to taking it seriously in the media, as greenlighted by the government. Okay.
Yes.
Because they had to get in front of this whole situation. Because people like myself, which is just a small component of all the people that do this, were putting out so much information. Hillary Clinton's emails on WikiLeaks, all this UFO stuff in there, John Podesta stuff, all this UFO stuff in there, right? And Grant Cameron did an event on our YouTube called the WikiLeaks emails, in which we have all those emails, and he goes through their emails on the UFO stuff. So they knew that if it came out without them being ahead of it, then they could get in trouble for lying to us. So instead, they started drip disclosing it with their own intentions, with their own agendas, in order to basically get it to a point that if we have a landing, if something happens, they can say, well, we told you. Look at this. We've been telling you for a long time now, you know?
Well, you're in an interesting position as well, putting on conferences, because even the online small conference that I do, and the guests on my show have to be vetted, of course, but you know, still some get through because there's an infiltration in this community going on right now that these individuals are actively trying to get into conferences, trying to get on talk shows, trying to get their false narrative and false information out there, because they're part of this spreading of misinformation from whatever agency, or even if they just want to muddy the waters, who knows? But how has that been for you, trying to kind of sift through the nonsense?
So there's two factors there. I 100% believe my intuition and the universe providing who needs to come. And the more I believe in that, the more I feel that happens. And then secondly, most of the people I work with, I vet out for quite some time. Or I have people that work with me that read their books and things like that, or I get recommended from people. Yeah. There's a few individuals that I feel are very shady and I've never worked with, but have been really huge in this movement for quite some time.
Yeah.
And then I also realized one time that when I went to Roswell and I went into this UFO office, and it was Christian ufology. And then I realized that there's a whole entire movement of Christians that are ufologists, that their whole entire agenda is to make it look like these ETs are demons, right? And evil aliens and alien invasion. And then it started connecting the dots, because then I realized who those individuals were.
Right.
Because if you dissect some of the information or look at the original stuff, it comes across there. So I'm not going to say anybody that, you know, we're all probably know, but I'll say someone.
Do you think that goes back to the Collins elite when they were kind of deeming all this stuff as evil, demonic stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, then we have, for example, Tom DeLonge. His original stuff was about these ETs being demons, his first book about it, right? And then when he comes out into the mainstream, he puts that to the side because he knows that the regular person that he's trying to connect with isn't going to accept that. And then just starts talking about, well, let's create this app where we can all, as soon as we see a UFO, you can just pick it up and you just let us know where you are and we can all track it. That was one of the first things in his broadcast that they said that they were going to do. But what happened to Tom DeLonge? He's gone off and done a bunch of media stuff now, but he's not the front of it anymore because they changed him with, what's that dude's name?
Elizondo?
No.
For the TTSA? I'm not sure who they got.
No. What's his name, dude? Jesse? Hold up. Okay, the guy that did Bob Lazar's documentary. He's like the number one face of it right now. Okay, I don't know if it'll come to me, especially with Jay.
Yeah, when you say it, I'll probably be like, oh yeah.
Yeah, he's a UFC. He's like into UFC. Has a beard. You know, he was on Joe Rogan with Bob Lazar twice. Anyways, they wanted someone that was going to follow the narrative, but was also appeal to a young audience, Tom DeLonge.
Yeah.
Then something happened behind the scenes with Tom DeLonge, and then they moved to this other dude that's now become the front of it all. Is on every single news station talking about it because they're trying to get this, they basically reached the audiences and the masses and the younger people in order to get them into their narrative.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the newer dude. I guess I haven't been paying enough attention to that mainstream UFO narrative. But it is very interesting. I think we're living in critical times when it comes to this stuff, as far as what we're going to take in as truth and what we're going to understand and what we're going to fall for. Because I think that it's very easily we could be led, or a lot of people could be led down the wrong path with this stuff. And where that could lead, I don't know. But it's, you know, definitely couldn't be good knowing our government officials and things of that nature.
Right. His name's Jeremy Corbell.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I know you're talking about now.
Yeah, dude. I mean, like, anything that the media and the government pushes as the face of something, you have to doubt. Like, you can't just accept it. But so many people are so into When will disclosure happen? I've been hearing that for 20 years. When will disclosure happen? The amount of people that have predicted the date of disclosure, I don't even go with dates anymore. It's just like, yeah. There's too much, you know? And then all of a sudden, when these individuals come out, Elizondo, Jeremy Corbell, and then they're actually getting it onto the mainstream, a lot of pure-hearted individuals are like completely for it because they're like, finally, something's happening, right? So, but they don't realize that there's so many conflicting agendas going on here. Unless you really know the person, right? Unless you really know what's going on behind the scenes, you can't speculate on whether they're good or bad. So you just got to neutrally observe and just see what happens.
Yes, right on. Mm-hmm. Now, for the last few minutes we have, I'd love to hear about this project that you said you're working on with these individual communities. What are you trying to do there?
All right. So I'm traveling the world, going to communities now, and to learn what works and what doesn't in order to create my own. And so I'm looking for land. I'm going to go check out land this Friday down here in the Yucatan, because I'm living in the Yucatan Peninsula right now, like the Maya area. And ultimately, I'm going to create a little town. And there's a lot of different things that we're going to implement there, that including like monthly town meetings where we get to talk in a place that's safe in order to work out our issues so that we don't hold resentments. You know, a lot of different things that I feel that will help us with psychology and just human interaction, and create a place of love and connection, man. You know, that's ultimately the goal. But when I first had this download to do Portals Ascension in 2008, it was like one full download, right? And it was like conferences, tours, retreats, disclosure information, rewriting the history timeline. But the eventual goal was to utilize the funds that I got from all that to create a village. And it was going to be like basically a fifth dimensional village, like an example of what we can create on Earth. You know, that's my goal. So I'm also moving around the world and meeting people, architects, different things. So I'm building the team right now in order to do this. I was going to do this in 2024, but because of what just happened the last couple of years, it's kickstarted my plans much earlier. And I don't want to be at a point where anybody can take away my rights. I want to create my own reality, you know?
Oh, hell yeah. Yes, man. Mm-hmm. That is what we need. Neil, thank you so much for coming on. We could talk for hours. I'm going to definitely have to have you back on soon in the future. There's so much more we could talk about. Before we head out, let everyone know a little bit more about Portal to Ascension, any projects mm-hmm. you have going, social media, website, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So as you said, right now we do around 110 events a year. And that's been going on for, you know, I've done over thousands of events, but for the last 3 to 4 years, that's been happening. And I just did an event last weekend, for example, 10-hour event on some ancient Sumerian Mesopotamia, 10 hours of like researches on Sumer. We have an ancient civilization series going on every single month. We do a different civilization, but also do workshops with different speakers. And then some free events. So I just did the Beyond UFO Disclosure event, which is on my youtube.com/portal2ascension. But the best way to connect and reach out, or the best way to stay connected to us, is go to portal2ascension.org, sign up there. You'll get a username and password emailed to you, and you immediately get 3,000 hours of footage available to you. That's like Netflix for consciousness, split up by speakers and topics and all this stuff. Every topic, you know, there's 10,000 hours of footage altogether, but 3,000 is available free immediately. And then you can sign up, go to online events there, sign up for upcoming events, sign up for free ones, paid ones, whatever. I do have our annual Portal to Ascension 3-day conference coming up in April, which is 33 speakers, 7 MCs, 2 panels in 3 days, 10 hours a day. And that one's just hardcore, like shift the world, paradigm shifting awareness nonstop, you know, really a high vibe event. So just check it out, portalextension.org, or go to our youtube.com/portal2ascension, or
awesome. Both. Great stuff, man. Thank you so much for coming on. And like I said, we'll definitely have to talk to you again sometime in the future.
Yeah, bro. Thank you so much, man.
For sure. Until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we'll be talking again later tonight. We got a little surprise for you. So talk then.